Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this episode of Senior Talk. Many of you may know I used to be the communications director at Eastern Area Agency on Aging prior to starting my own business. And now I am a very proud board member. My guests today are Tabitha Caso, executive director of Eastern, and Tammy Bryant. She is phenomenal. She's a board member, a committee member, an extraordinary volunteer who has been boots on the ground talking to older Mainers who desperately need and rely on the services that Eastern provides. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you for
Certainly.
having us.
So there's currently critical legislation being discussed in Augusta. You both testified. I wrote testimony. We're all trying to make this happen. Tabby, LD 814 is the Older Mainers Act, an act to provide funding to area agencies on aging. And there are five in the states, not just you guys, that covers the entire state, for community-based services and programs to support older adults. So can you explain why this act is so important and the services that it funds? What does it mean, community-based services?
Yeah, thanks, Carol. So as you know, that was a mouthful to say. So I'm just going to call it the Older Mainers Act from here on forward, so it's easier to refer to. And so I will start by just briefly explaining that, like you said, there's five area agencies on this in the state. So Eastern Area Agency on Aging is just one of them. And we cover Penobscot, Piscataquis, Washington, and Hancock counties. But all of the AAAs across the state provide what we call core services, which are things like Meals on Wheels, caregiver respite, Medicare counseling and services. And then we also have evidence-based programming and, several other things, but kind of those core services we all provide across the state, in addition to some of us do some added things as well. And so, kind of before we dive into why the Older Mainers Act is needed, I think just a little bit of history about funding is needed. And so, during the pandemic, we were very fortunate that we got a lot of federal pandemic funding to really help older Mainers who were isolated at home during the, you couldn't leave your house kind of days. And during that process, a lot of our programs grew because people needed meals delivered to their homes. So Meals on Wheels, for example, used to have roughly 300 to 400 people on it. And at times it was well over 1,000 people. And then now the pandemic money's gone. And we had to go back to pre-pandemic funding. And unfortunately, during this whole process, the need did not go away. And so the people who needed the services still need the services, but that added funding is gone. And so we had to revert back to the funding that we had. And so now we have roughly 400 to 500 people on Meals on Wheels at once. So that has resulted in a wait list. And we have about 340 people on our wait list right now at Eastern, but statewide we have 650 people on just Meals on Wheels wait list. We do have a respite wait list. We have a wait list for our Furry Friends Food Bank. We have a respite for a wait list for our Money Minders program. And so, really, what this bill, the whole intent of this bill is to meet the needs of the people we're not currently serving, but that's not just the people on the wait list. It's well beyond that. And so there are things we don't have wait lists for, such as Medicare services and supports. However, during Medicare open enrollment, our busiest time of year, we start having to turn people away for appointments a couple weeks after those appointments open because they're full. And so what it really comes down to is we have wait lists and we don't have the funding to meet that need. But in reality, there are bigger needs out there that we just don't have the capacity to do in general. So the goal of the bill is really to eliminate wait lists and expand services to meet all those needs. So we will eliminate all of the Meals on Wheels wait lists statewide. We will expand case management and navigation services.
And what does
It
that
will.
mean? What are those, when you say case management, can you explain what that is for people who don't know?
Yeah, so right now what happens is when people call the agency, they're calling because they have some sort of unmet need. And so they're calling and saying, I don't have food or I don't have fuel or whatever it may be. And right now they call the agency and they get a hold of a resource specialist. And that person is trained to know the resources both internally and externally in their community to link them to wherever may meet that need. But that's it. They give them the phone number and say, good luck kind of situation, because we're fielding 13,000 calls a year. And so when we only have so many people to field those calls. And that's not really the best way to handle the situation, because that's really a band-aid, is how I call it. Like, it just fixes that one little problem in the moment if they follow up with the resource. But if they don't follow up with the resource, they're not getting that need met. But what case management and navigation services let us do is really assess that person's full situation. So if they're calling because they don't have food, they probably don't have other things they need too. Or maybe they're spending their money on medication and there's a Medicare plan they could switch to be able to then have that money for food. So the case management navigation services looks at the whole picture, everything going on in their life, and really links them to the resources they need. But the person can then actually help them do that, follow them through that process, and make sure they get their full needs met. And so it really allows us to continue to work with them until they get to that point, versus right now, it truly is, here's a phone number, good luck, which is not great customer service and is not what we want to do. But unfortunately, with our funding and capacity we have right now, that is the kind of the state that we're in.
And you have no way of knowing, really, probably if people actually follow through. I know a number of older adults, they'd be grateful for the number, they'd have it, but they would never make that call.
Correct.
And a lot of people talk about Meals on Wheels, which is a vital service. I can't even imagine someone who's waiting for their meal. They're having a sandwich or crackers or something for dinner. And that's reality, waiting in order to get a nutritious meal. I saw something in some of the information you sent me. This really was mind-boggling to me, that the Older Mainers Act will pay for itself if Agency on Aging Services can keep just 103 older Mainers out of Medicaid-funded nursing homes for 1 year. That was extraordinary to me. What are some of the other financial savings if this goes through? While it seems like a lot of money, it is a lot of money, but not in the greater scheme of things of what it's really going to provide and how it's going to help people.
Right. So the whole bill is 9.75 million, which, yes, seems like a lot. So before people stop listening, yeah, I can explain a little bit more about how the bill really is an investment for the state of Maine, and it will put money back into the economy too. And so, like you mentioned, going to a nursing facility, if someone's going under MaineCare or Medicaid funding, it's roughly $94,000 per year to pay for that nursing facility bed for 1 year. And then if they're on Meals on Wheels, for example, it's less than $10 a day to provide them that meal. But also, there have been studies done. Brown University did a 5-year-long study where there was over 29,000 Meals on Wheels recipients. And after just 30 days, it showed a reduction of 30% reduced hospitalizations, 28% reduced ER visits, 28% reduced nursing placement visits. So, and then in addition, that same study just showed reduced reimbursement costs for Medicare. And so in reality, a lot of these programs and services that we provide are what I call preventative or proactive versus reactive. So right now, a lot of people, because we don't have the case management, the navigation, or people are on wait lists, they're calling us in a crisis situation. And at that point, it's too late, right? And they're ending up in a nursing home. They're already in a nursing home or a hospital. And so the goal of this bill really is to be proactive and preventative and provide the services before they get to the crisis situation. And then that point, hopefully they don't get to the crisis situation. But if they do, they're already linked to our agency and we're already working with them and following them, and we can continue to support them. So that's a big piece of it. Another big piece of it is caregivers. So part of this bill is going to expand services for caregivers and resources. And the point of that is to keep caregivers working if they're working. So get the services their loved one needs at home so they can continue to work and really and reinforce kind of some of the workforce issues that we're seeing. And then with the Medicare piece of it, if we're able to expand Medicare support and counseling, the way that we help people with Medicare right now is we get them on a better plan for them that meets their needs, and it reduces the cost of their prescriptions and things like that. And if we're able to double that based on our current data that we have, it would allow for over $3.6 million to stay in Mainers' pockets, which then goes right back into the economy because they'll have that money to buy food, go to stores, and get the things that they need. And so there are different ways that it would really reinvest into the communities and continue to support growth in that area as well.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk more about this. And Tammy, I'm going to come to you when we come back. You talk to a lot of people about this, about their needs for your testimony in Augusta. So stay with us. There's lots more to come. We'll be right back right after this. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk discussing LD 814, Critical Services. Tammy, so you have been a volunteer for a very long time. I've filled a lot of roles. I enjoy serving with you on the board and on the development committee. You actually took to the phones and talked to people about their lives in preparation for this. What are some of the things that you heard from the actual people who would benefit from this, and who are benefiting from the services they get from Eastern?
Yeah, thank you, Carol. Yeah, what I did was I was calling the folks on the wait list to update information. So I was asking demographic and health related questions. And what I was surprised about was how many are challenged with lack of mobility, lack of transportation, lack of income. I had one woman tell me she has $972 a month income. Her rent is $700 of that. I talked with people who have macular degeneration. One woman can't see to cook. Another woman has arthritis so bad, she told me, I can't peel a potato. Another man who just lost his wife, he was her caretaker. He said she did everything, while she was healthy, and now he is completely lost. He doesn't cook, he doesn't know how to pay the bills. He said he feels completely isolated. I found one man who said his esophageal cancer was so advanced, he's slowly starving to death. And he asked about pureed food, which is something we could supply for him. So these are folks that have been on the wait list in some cases going on a year or more. And the stories are just heartbreaking. One in particular, I spoke with a woman whose husband is in the very late stages of Parkinson's disease, and he can't communicate. She is afraid to leave him because he might fall. She said he was very popular. He was a basketball coach, always had people around, but now they can't communicate. Nobody comes around. She can't leave the home to go shopping. Family stays away there. She's just was beside herself. So you hear these stories and you think, respite services this de woman desperately needs. She needs the meals for herself and her husband, actually. During my calls, I found one woman who had no heat, one woman who had no water. Her water was frozen. And again, these are referrals that would be made to the resource department. And if they had the meals delivered to them, that volunteer driver would discover some of these things and be able to report this back to the agency.
And then changes can be made.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I've seen it happen, how the Meals on Wheels drivers are so hands-on. They're in the house and really can do an informal assessment and see if somebody isn't living the way they could be living and getting the things that they need. But if you don't, Tabby, if you don't have the resources, what do you do with these stories? I remember when I worked there, they kept me up at night. I can only imagine how you're feeling being the executive director. What do you do about this?
So that's a really hard question to answer, Carol. And because I mean, like the Meals on Wheels waitlist, I think is a great example. Like I just had a provider reach out to me today, a community partner, and said, "Oh, we went and did a home visit, and this person needs help. And here's the concern. And can we bump them up to the top of your waitlist?" And I get these requests all the time. And as much as I just want to say, yes, I can't. How do I choose to bump one person up over the other? And I can't. It's against the rules. The rules actually require us to take people off the wait list based on very specific priorities. And there's a whole list of them, so I won't go over them all. But the rules and regulations honestly add an added challenge to it all. And so some of the things, though, to your question that we're doing is, like Tammy had mentioned, we do have our resource team. So if there's people who are on the wait list, we are trying to link them to resources that can maybe meet their needs in the meantime. The issue does become, can they get to the food pantry, or are there even other paid for delivery programs in their area? And sometimes these very rural folks, there's not. And then so we try to talk to them about, do they have friends or neighbors that can help, local churches that can help? And so our resource team, when they're linked to them, they really do try to help them. But to Tammy's point before, is, we have one lady who's been on the wait list for 450 days, and she's 91 years old. She's blind, she's homebound, and she has memory loss. And so we will talk to her, we'll assess her, we'll add her on the wait list, and then we try to call every 6 months to kind of reassess and make sure they're still doing okay. But we're also trying in the meantime to get meals out to the people we're currently serving, and they're just, the capacity's not enough. And so a couple different things that we are doing to try to help the situation is grant writing. We're writing lots and lots of grants to try to get more Meals on Wheels funding, and we have gotten some, but still not enough. We're doing fundraising. So we do offer, we do different appeals. We just did a specific Meals on Wheels appeal, but then we're also doing different events like our Healthy Aging Expo, and we do a breakfast in the fall. We do our annual appeal. So just finding every way we can to get extra dollars in the door. And then we do have some different partnerships that we're working on. I'm not supposed to disclose the name, but right now we're working on a specific partnership where a community partner is going to give us funding for veterans specifically, because that's part of their mission. And we're going to be able to take all the veterans on the wait list off the wait list based on this money. And so we're really trying to find unique ways like that to target additional funding. But when we do that, we have to follow that funding rules versus the traditional federal funding that we get for our core services that I had mentioned before.
A lot of people really think Meals on Wheels is probably the most visible and well-known program. But some of the others, the Medicare program where you really help people, that's huge. I know that even when I worked there, lo, these many years ago, the savings were incredible because the amount of money that people will spend on their medications if they don't have the right drug plan is insane. It'll take your breath away, the amount of money people are wasting because they just don't have the resources. They just don't know what to do. And the money minders, we mentioned that, but talk to me about what money minders is, because that is also, we're almost out of time for this segment, but talk to me about money minders. I've always loved that program, and it's not talked about a lot, but it makes a huge difference.
Sure. So Money Minders really is a situation where it's a volunteer-based program, because we don't get much funding for it at all. And so we have a core group of volunteers that will go and do home visits with people, and they will help them organize their bills, go through their bills, figure out when they're due, create a plan, and then they'll help them budget, manage their bills of how are they going to pay for it all, and when they're going to pay them to make sure they're getting their bills done on time. And this program's a really great program for kind of one of the situations Tammy mentioned where you have a spouse that passes away, that spouse has always paid the bills and you don't even know where to start. And so these people will come to your home once a month and help you. And I know you said we're running out of time, but that kind of led me to volunteers. And you had asked before about different ways that we're kind of trying to work on things. So maybe when we get back, we can talk about volunteers a little bit as well.
And that's a perfect segue to take a break. When we come back, we are going to talk about volunteerism, what you can do to help, how important even a few dollars is to donate, and how you can reach out to your local representatives and make this happen. We'll be right back right after this. Stay with us. Lots more to come. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk, Tabitha Queso and Tammy Bryant. When we left, Tab, you gave me the best segue about volunteering and what a difference it can make. And I just want to say up front, Eastern is such an amazing place to volunteer because you're so appreciated there. Everything you do there, they're so appreciative. You can actually see firsthand the difference that you make by being a volunteer. And I can't say enough about it. Make the call. Tabby, talk to me about volunteers, what you need, what you're looking for, and also with funding. How critical is this, and what was the sense you got in Augusta of where this might land? I know that's a long question, but feel
Feel
Just
like that's
have at
a
it.
two-part question.
At least,
Yeah, maybe three.
yeah.
So for volunteers, I did kind of when you had asked that question before, and what led me there was volunteers is a huge piece of our agency. I mean, both of you are volunteers, right? And so at Eastern Area Agency on Aging, we have about 500 volunteers, but across the state, there's over 1,200 volunteers. And so when we say the AAAs, the Area Agencies on Aging, are trying to stretch their dollars, volunteers are a big way that we do that. And so the more volunteers that we have, the more we can provide these services. And so when I had mentioned before about Medicare open enrollment and, appointments open in October and we're full in October, like the more volunteers we have, we can expand those services and hit more people. Same with Money Minders. We do have a wait list for Money Minders right now. And it's more about like matching the volunteer to the area, the community that the person lives in. Like sometimes we have volunteers and no consumers, and sometimes we have consumers and no volunteers. And so on our website, there is an area under ways to help where you can click volunteer opportunities, and it has a list of all the current volunteers we need. But with this funding, if we receive it, a big part of it will be we'll continue to grow our volunteer base. And so the funding bill really is not about adding a ton more staff other than maybe more case managers and navigation, but it really is about paying for the food, right? Like it's paying for those the basic needs and really growing our volunteer base to expand those services. With that being said, we always need volunteers, whether it be front desk volunteers at our Durgin Center, Meals on Wheels delivery volunteers, like Tammy had mentioned, making phone calls, doing the Money Minders home visits. So always in need. If you want to help, we'd love to hear from you. And then your question about the bill and like kind of how big is it? What happens if it doesn't get funded? What happened in Augusta? So I will say Augusta was amazing when it, and Tammy can add as she wants, the turnout for the testimony. I forget the numbers off the top of my head, but I think with verbal and written, there was over 60 people that provided testimony, and the whole room was full of people testifying for our bill. And so the Health and Human Services Committee did have a work session already. And they unanimously approved the bill. And so the bill is moving forward, which is a great first step. And now it's going to go to the floor and it needs more support. And so on the floor, that means that we need everybody to reach out to their representatives in their communities or statewide if you want to, and make sure they know about LD 814, the Older Mainers Act, and tell them how important it is to you and your community or your mom or your neighbor. They need to hear the story. They need to know the difference that this bill will make. And then from there, it goes to like appropriations, and there's like a whole system. So there's lots of steps, and we got through step one, and that's a step in the right direction. And then when it comes to what, like, how important is it? What happens if it doesn't get funded? And so what happens if it doesn't get funded? Is the wait lists are going to continue to grow. People's needs are going to continue to not be met. And when their needs aren't met and they can't get food, they can't get help, they can't get support, likely they're going to end up in a nursing home or assisted living or a hospital. And the other piece to this is some of the AAAs have wait lists and some of us don't. And the ones that don't, they are actually in deficits right now. They're kind of like fronting the money to continue the services when they don't have the money. So they're not going to be able to take people off the wait list. They're not going to be able to add more people on. So statewide, it's just going to keep growing and growing and growing. And we all know people are getting older every single day. And cost of living is skyrocketing. It rents more money, fuels more money. Like things just keep costing more. And so I mean, my personal opinion, and I'm sure you can find all the data to support it, is this is a dire situation. And if we don't make a difference and we don't get funding, we're not taking care of our older Mainers, period.
If somebody wants to reach out to their representatives, but they're not sure what to say, what to do, who to call, how do we help them do that?
Sure. So I realized I forgot to say that. So I'm so glad you asked. On our website, so it's eaaa.org, eaaa.org, there's a section that says ways to help. And there's a button in there that says Older Mainers Act. And if you click that button, there is all kinds of information about what the bill is, what it includes, statistics and data that support the bill and how we came to some of the data I mentioned. And then there also is a link to figure out who is the legislator in your area. And there's some talking points too. So all of that information is right on our website and can kind of lead you in the direction you need to go to. But I would just add, don't worry about what you say or about the bill. Just tell them the story and why taking care of older people is important for you. That in itself is enough. So don't worry about having it be perfect.
Best of luck to you both. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for coming on to talk about this. I hope you'll come back and give an update at some point. Remember, you can go to eaaa.org, eaaa.org, or 1-800-432-7812 is their 800 number. If you need a little bit of help, that's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Thank you so much for listening.